Thank you. And we'll turn it over to Jen.
Thanks, Anne Marie, for your service. Thanks, Bobby. Thanks, Jeff. And thank you, Allison and the New Jersey group. Wow, what a cool concept. I'm feeling groovy. And I didn't have time for an outfit change because I wanted to go hear my best friend do the keynote speech. And so I just sit here in my Colorado sweats this morning. But I mean, wow, how cool. I remember one of my first retreats that I went to in Colorado. The theme was like 60s peace, love, feeling groovy type of thing. And I have a photo with my sponsor, you know, all decked out in my bell bottom jeans and, you know, fun little vest. And I felt like I should come prepared in more of like an ensemble. But what you're going to realize is it's not the outside of me that matters anymore. What I really want you to experience is a transformation of my heart. So hopefully you can see that today and hear that today, because that's God working in a girl like me. So anyways, whoo, I'm a little emotional this week and don't know how that's going to all happen, but it's a good thing and it's a God thing. So let me go ahead and share my pictures and we'll get down to the nitty gritty. So my name is Jen A. I am a recovered compulsive overeater, anorexic, bulimic, and exercise bulimic. And I came into the program in 2016. And I came in desperate, dying, and done. You know, you can see some of the pictures. I was a pleasantly plump girl. I became heavy. I was never morbidly obese, but I exercised my way with that big old weight down to absolutely nothing. I did a bikini competition and I thought I had arrived, right? I was like, just like in Bill's story, did this, did that. Now I arrived. Now I was doom and gloom. And then the next one you see with me in the little triangle necklace, that's me anorexic. 120 pounds. I'm dripping wet. I came into this program dying. And then the next three are pictures of me in recovery when I found God, found this program. I found the LA Inner Group, and that's the beach, Manhattan Beach at the OA birthday party. If you haven't been, you mark your calendar. Next year, I want to see you there. It's life changing. But what I really want to share with you is that's just me, you know, in the years of compulsively eating. And there were 40 some years of that, from age 8 all the way up to 40 something. But this is me over the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, almost 8 years. Thank you, God, with my kids. So you can see that from head to toe, you know, we started showing these pictures online because you can only see me from here up in my baggy sweatshirt. What I want you to see is like, look, I've remained the same in the same size body. It's, you know, the definition of Overeaters Anonymous is refraining from compulsive food and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. I was one of those girls who had to gain weight. You know, I had gained a bunch of weight, but man, can I show you how to take it off, lose it, and all that? Like I got the deals. I got the pills, I got the potions. And yeah, so I'll stop sharing from there. But like I said earlier, what I want you to really hear is how it works. Right? That's what we're here to hear today. On page 58 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. That's in pink in my book. That is a promise. If you thoroughly follow this path, that means the 12 steps, the proposals that were laid at your feet when you came to this program. If you put down the food, the exercise, the pills, the potions, and everything in between, can you have what we have? Can you come into the center of the herd? Can you say, I am recovered, and no longer saying, I am compulsively overeating and I'm doomed and gloomed in this program? Yes, you can. And that's what this chapter tells us. And I remember, you know, I was doomy and gloomy. I was going to meetings. I got a slew of coins, you know, they're probably like all in my jar in my room. And, you know, I was collecting coins, thinking I was doing the deal, eating healthy. I shopped at Whole Foods or natural grocers, but yet I was dying on the inside because all I wanted to do was be like Twiggy skinny, you know, like if you could see my clavicles and my hip bones and my arms look like chicken, you know, like bones after you took the meat off, that was good. That's how I wanted to be. And if I was that way, then you would surely like me and love me. Because as a compulsive overeater my whole life, I wasn't thin, you know. And I didn't get loved like I thought I should get loved. And I didn't have the friends and I didn't have the acceptance. And I wasn't that great of a girl. At least I didn't think I was. But I was living in the disease of compulsive overeating, and I didn't know it until I got here in my 40s. But thank you that God saved a girl like me in her 40s, because my 40s and 50s have been even better. And I work at a retirement community, and all the people I work with or who move in are 62 or older. And I tell them I have a kid that graduated from college and this and their thing. They go, "You're how old? How old were you when you had them?" And last week when I'm writing inventory and bitch moaning and complaining to my sponsor about my body changing, because it's the change, people. It happens when you get older. He says to me, "How old are you again?" I go, "Oh, I just turned 52." He goes, "Well, you look like you're 40, so shut up." And so I have to be reminded of this. But again, do you hear all the emphasis on the outward appearance? How it works helps me look at the inward appearance of my heart. Because the inward appearance of my heart and who I was like you heard Susan say, yes, itchy, twitchy, and bitchy. Because I didn't identify in as irritable, restless, and discontent. What the hell is that? Irritable? I'm not irritable. Yeah, you are. Restless? What's restless? Oh, yeah, like my feet are twitching. I'm tapping my pen. I'm chewing. I'm tapping my fingers on my cup. I was just crazy all the time, going this way, that way. And discontented, that wasn't even a word in my vocabulary. So I had to come up with words that resonated with a girl like me. And when I went through how it works with my sponsor, when I, you know, I, it was funny because I was at a face-to-face meeting with my sponsee who took step three today. And then we went to a step three meeting in person. And I highly suggest y'all get back to in-person meetings. There are too many people dying out there in the rooms who are not hearing a message. We have been blessed in abundance with this video and this Zoom and this platform. Take what you learn and share it with others. Share the message in step 12. Go out to your communities, be involved, give service, because people are dying. And I watch the same people die in my rooms that are still in there dying, but then I do see a few lights come on in people that haven't. And I bear witness to that this fall, and it's beautiful. Okay, that's my little commercial break. Okay, so getting back to the third step, right? We commit our will and our lives over to the care of something bigger and better than me. Because I thought I was a badass. Like I thought I could handle everything. I handled the loss of a child stillbirth at almost full term in my 30s. I thought I could handle that. No, I didn't handle that so hot. I thought I could, handle a marriage, a husband who was dabbling in pornography and do all that. Thought I could handle it. No, you couldn't handle that well. But you know what I did do really good? I ate over it. I exercised over it, stuck my finger down my throat, popped pills and potions into my body. That's how I dealt with it. But it tells me on this first page right here, it says right here, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. You heard what I was like in a nutshell. What happened to me? Well, I got desperate. I wasn't eating and drinking and doing all that stuff, but let me tell you how it worked for me. It happened for seven convenience stores, and by the seventh one in a back alleyway with the bakery bags and boxes at my feet and in the passenger seat, I was ready to take steps one and two. And I was able to get to a meeting. It was called There's a Solution. And we read this. It was an AA meeting in Colorado that I went to every day, and they read how it works. And I would open my book and I would read word by word, line by line. And it says, and what we are like now, and if you've decided you want what we have and you're willing, it's willingness, and you're willing to go to any length to get it. When you're ready, you're going to take certain steps. Those are the 12 steps. You can't just sit in meetings. You can't just learn slogans, and you can't just, sit in that chair. There is a membership, and it's just a desire. We take a desire chip, but then you have to be willing to do what? Willingness has to be preceded by action. It's called How It Works. We're gonna, get into action in this fifth chapter. And what I'm gonna learn is I'm gonna know that I have to go to any lengths to get it. Any lengths means being uncomfortable. I was just writing about that and thinking about that when Susan was speaking. I have to be really, really uncomfortable before I'm willing to make a decision to do anything. Even today, as a recovered woman. And in some of these, we walked, we thought we could find an easier, softer way. I got, 65 things in another page on the doctor's opinion that says the ways in which I try to control my eating didn't work. 65 things. Are you done? Put a fork in it. And so with all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, but the result was nil until we let go absolutely. What does it look like to let go? Whether you're in steps one, two, and three, heading to step four, or you're doing a step 10, what it means to let go is, I'm so good at getting on an airplane. I'm so good at sitting down and fastening my seatbelt and listening to the lady as she describes the card and the exit ways. She's so beautiful as she does that thing with her hands. And I'm so good at letting the pilot fly. But as soon as the turbulence hits, oh shit, I'm grabbing the handles. I'm looking around. I'm panicking. And letting go means turning my hands over, my palms facing upward, and just wiggling and jiggling like Jell-O on an airplane. On the airplane of life, where there's going to be turbulence, and there's going to be turbulence. In how it works, we're looking at what? Step four. We're looking at step three. We're taking that big leap of faith. We're putting our toes on the edge of the cliff. And I always say it's kind of like Pocahontas in the movie. If you haven't seen it, look it up. She stands on the edge of the cliff and she just like throws her arms out and she dives into the unknown, right? Like she just goes. She's trusting in God. She says, "I'm giving you my life, my thoughts and my actions." I didn't just do this one time. I remember being at the Starbucks, terrified to death of my first sponsor, crying my eyes out, trying to just read it off the pages because I hadn't memorized it and I didn't even know what the third step was. But then when it really took like a firm grip and hold of my heart was after that last time I binged, and I called this man and he said he'd be my sponsor. I gripped that steering wheel every morning at 6 a.m. on the way to this AA clubhouse, praying the third step prayer over and over in my head. I had memorized it looking at that, that nice little sheet on the wall that they have so nice and big in the AA meetings. And I learned that over and over and over again. And I just read it and read it and read it until it resonated with my heart. And I really took that third step. And it took me like 30 days to really take a solid step three. I remember it. And after I've turned my will and my life, my thoughts and my actions over to God, then what do I do with it next? Guess what? On page number 64, it gives me concise and clear directions. But before I get to page four, it gives me something even better. It gives me page 63, and those are promises. Because see, I'm the girl who can be nice. I'm the girl who can be mean. I'm the girl who can be in between, and I can do what I want and act how I want to get you to do what I want you to do. And I can be the girl in the china shop. I can be, that one who's going to come in and rear my ugly head and just be awful to you. But then I'll turn around and just, bomb you with love and affection and kindness. But it tells me on page number 63 that if you decide you want to do what we have, and if you decide you want to abandon your will and your life over to the care of God, then guess what's going to happen? Remarkable things are going to happen for you. You can read about those. You're going to contribute to life. I'm going to be a contributor. Today I'm being a contributor. I worked with a sponsee. I contributed at a meeting. I'm coming here and contributing on this panel. I'll contribute later in my relationship with my boyfriend who gets ignored all day. I heard somebody say that. We ignore our loved ones sometimes, but we got to go back to them. I'll contribute tomorrow by going to watch my daughter play volleyball. I'll contribute by going back to work on Monday and being a team player and helping everybody get to goal. Not so I can get a commission, so that we can all celebrate, right? The joy and just the goodness of being a winning team. So I turn my will and my life over to God, and then I take this step four process. Ladies and gentlemen, the journey that you're about to embark into in step four or step 10 is no easy journey. I remember embarking on this journey, and my sponsor said, "Here's the columns. This is what you're going to write. You're going to look at people, places, institutions. You're going to see how they wronged you. You're going to tell, exactly what they did to you." And I've heard it said, describe it in 10 words or less. I tell my sponsees, dump it, because I don't want to hear about person in column one in column four again. Columns one, two, and three, you better dump it, get rid of it, and vomit it all out. And I had no problem doing that. Because I don't want it to come back when it's my turn to like figure out what I've done wrong. And that's the beautiful thing about this is that I thought I was perfect. I thought I was beautiful. I thought I was everything to everybody. But I couldn't understand why they didn't like me. And I couldn't understand why I was about everything, over exercising because I was uncomfortable in my own skin. But when I took this inventory process and I started to uncover and discover the things about myself, it was hard. It's not easy. The fourth step is the biggest gateway to freedom. It's no longer a Twinkie. It's no longer a Chick-fil-A milkshake. Yes, I do still miss them. My son has a peppermint one for me every Christmas, right? It's about getting freedom from the things that are eating you up inside. There's this book I used to read with my kids. It was so great. And there was this little boy, and it talked about how he was so uncomfortable and he was so like afraid, and it did talk about the fear. But he would get these angry fishes that would swim down his stomach, and I can still see the illustration of the stick-figured boy with this round belly with all this in the back in the seat of his belly. And that's how I am, and that's how I can still be. But when I came here, it was like my whole body was just consumed with that. And I had to get rid of it somehow. And how do I do it? I do it by taking this inventory. It says, because I'm just jumping to the promises today. On page 64, down in the middle, it says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we're going to straighten out mentally and physically, right? So now what are we going to do? It tells us right here, it gives me instructions. Okay, well, put down your resentments. Set them all on paper. Please don't do these in your head. Please don't do a step 10 in your head. For in my opinion, and how I work this 12-step program, I put it down on paper. Why? Because I need to see in black and white what my mind, okay, if this is a mind problem, if it's an allergy of the body and a twist of the mind, my mind is going to make up stories, listen to them, and believe them. And as I'm doing this 4-step work, I can't keep going up here. I got to put it all down here, write it out in black and white, and then go back and reread it to that person who's taking my 5th step or my inventory on my 10th step. Why? Because that's the key. I got to be able to see what I'm thinking. I can't see what's up here. This is the mess, right? People call it the hamster wheel. People call it all sorts of things. It's the dangerous neighborhood that I'm walking in. You know, that I keep revisiting. Put it down on the paper, get rid of it. And you're going to write down the persons, the institution, the principals, and whom you're angry with. And then you're going to ask yourself, well, why am I angry? Why? Let it out. Put it down on the paper. And when you're doing the inventory process, I have this really sweet book that my sponsor gave me a sheet and he typed it all out. I was just telling my sponsor that Swansea, that was funny. I have this book of inventory that I've been doing my whole life in this program. I'm just going to flip to one. And you know, when I'm looking at the cause, what is the exact reason why I'm angry? Exactly. Tell me exactly, Jennifer, why you're angry. And then I've got to look at how it affects me. This is the biggest eye opener for me. Now I'm still bitching in column number 3 because it affects me. It's all about me still, column number 3. My self-esteem or my pride. How do I want to be seen by other people? You know, I am or I should be admired. I shouldn't be interrupted at work. You know, I have this big project I'm working on. Personal relationships, coworkers should do what? Boyfriend should be a certain way. Fellows and programs should act this way. You know, I get to look at all those things. Sex relations, whether it's, I always use sex relations just for family, for loved ones and kids. You know, there's something in here. They should be acting a certain way and I don't like it. So I write exactly down what I don't like about them. Get it out, vomit it up. And then security, you know, how does it affect my security? What do I need in order to feel safe? That's what was wrong with me. The reason I held all that fear down in my belly, the angry fish, was because I wasn't feeling safe. And the ambitions, what do I really want? Safety is what's in my house that I need in order to be okay. Ambitions are what I want. They're what I think I need. And I don't really know what I need. That's why I'm using this process to help me get to God so I can figure it out. And then my pocketbook. How did I pay? You can pay with just more than money, with work. I can pay with my time. I can pay in relationships. I can pay with all sorts of things. And then in personal relationships, I also want to say too, it's like, well, how does this affect my personal relationships? Because when I'm strung out and pissed off at work or with a boyfriend, it affects everything. It affects how I show up with my sponsees. It affects how I show up in this meeting. It affects how I show up with my coworkers, my kids. It affects on how I treat the clerk at the grocery store. Affects everything. And then as we're going through this book, not only does it give us the examples and teach us how to do it, I'm so sorry because my book's falling apart, which it's a good thing it's falling apart because my life is not, that I look at all these pages and then I write down in all these columns. And then I want you to flip over to page 67 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I'm done looking at how this person, place, or institution affects me and how I can get down to the nitty-gritty, it gives me a prayer. I love prayers. I love the prayers in the book. Where did it go, prayer? Where did you go? I said 60, what? Okay, something. Here we go. Okay. So on page 67, this prayer is in a vertical line on my sheet, my inventory sheet. And if you want, I'll put my name and number in the chat and you can reach out to me. And I'll send you the sheet. It's straight out of what's in the big book. But I put a line with the prayer sideways in a column because my girlfriend and I used to always do this inventory. We always forget to pray. So we were still holding on to columns 1, 2, and 3 and the people, and we weren't moving on to ourselves. And I need to figure out why those fish are swimming down there and why I'm so disturbed. And I love how it starts out. Although I do not like their symptoms and the way they disturb me, they are sick like me too. Yes, my kids can be sick. My boyfriend can be sick. My coworkers can be sick. So we must ask God. You're leaning in and asking God again for help. You prayed the third step prayer. You've turned your will and your life over. You've written this inventory, and you're asking God to help you show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience. Look those words up. Look up the opposites. That's how I'm being with this person. I'm not tolerant. I'm not showing them any pity. And I definitely don't have any patience with people who are, doing me dirty or doing me wrong. Because we can cheerfully grant a sick friend that tolerance, pity, and patience. And when a person offended me, I said something like this to myself: "This is a sick man or woman. How can I be helpful to him or her?" And I insert their name, the institution, the person, or whatever. And then this is the best part: "God, save me from being angry. Thy will, not mine, be done." You hear it? Like, even to just pray it with you guys just takes me to a new place because I'm here to have a shift. I'm here to go from me to God. And that's what I love about this process. And when I pray that prayer, I pray it out loud and I pray it again after I write it and I pray it with my sponsor. And then we avoid retaliation or argument because we're not going to treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. And we cannot be helpful to all people. Thank God that gets me off the hook, right? The shackles are off my feet. I cannot help everybody. But it does say, God will show me how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. How cool is that? So now, referring to my list again, and I put out of my mind the wrongs that I have done to others, I'm going to look in that fourth column and I'm going to see me. And I learned at a retreat one time, it's called FOTS, Fellowship of the Spirit, it's an AA Al-Anon convention, that I place my hand over the first three columns or I fold that piece of paper back. It is not for me to look at that person, but it is for me to thank that person that God brought that person into my life as the vehicle to help me see where I'm out of alignment. Okay, so here we go. Then I'm going to look at, well, where had I been selfish? Back to my little inventory page. I prayed the prayer. Here I go. What's my attitude? Selfish is such a hard word. Oh, I ain't selfish, girl. Like, I'm so selfish. But my attitude, what was my attitude in this situation? And these are all statements that start with I expect people. I should be able to perform. I want the office to do this. I'm just reading what I wrote here randomly, whatever date this was. And then where am I self-seeking? Take that self-seeking word and write action next to it. What is the action? How did I show up? I'm demanding. I'm complaining. I'm chewing them up and spitting them out in my head. I'm thinking about them, then I'm talking about them and gossiping with them to a coworker. Oh, shame. That's who I am. I ain't perfect. I'm human. This is where I get to see my humanness and I write it all out. And then what's my dishonesty? Dishonesty is what's the story that I'm telling myself? I can't make that other person to be the way I want them to be. They are capable at their level of consciousness of being who they are. I am here. They are there. There's a lot of other things I'm dishonest about. I'm being self-righteous. I can be that way a lot. My sponsee reminds me of that all the time, like, oh, self-righteous. We're always doing inventory, and that's what I hear. And then what am I afraid of? It gets down to the fear. And let's not stop there because it's super important that when you're done, it doesn't end at fear. You know, fear is bracketed, he says, on the list at the bottom of 67. Fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties of everything. It is the evil and corroding thread that runs through the fabric of our existence. That's somewhere in the big book. I've read it. I memorized it. I've read it with sponsees again. I memorized it, and I know that when I'm clothed with the cloak of righteousness, this thing, you know, if I were to take this raveled thread and this is fear and I was to pull it, it would just keep unraveling and unraveling. I'm full of fear. That's who I am. So we go to page number 68 and we review our fears thoroughly. And I've been taught by my sponsor that I flip that resentment inventory over and I look at the fears on the opposite side. And I'm going to take it down the rabbit hole because it's taken a hold of me. Name the fear. What's the fear that you're having, Jennifer? Run it through. Say it. Like, what am I afraid of? I am afraid of, and sometimes I have to run it down several different chutes, several different columns. I'm afraid that I'm going to look bad at work. And if I look bad at work, then my coworkers are going to think I'm incompetent. If I'm incompetent, they won't want me to work with them. If they don't want me to work with them, they will surely want to fire me and make me so miserable that I'll want to leave the company. If I have to leave the company, then I have to go and ask for help from my parents because I can't financially stay on my feet. I'll be a failure. I'll be a failure. Before my friends, before my family, before my coworkers, and even worse, get this, today, I'll be a failure before God. Don't want to be that. But that's a big fear. That's really real. And I take it down that fear page. Why do I have this fear? Keep asking yourself, if that happens, then what? Ask my sponsees. I'm hard on them. I'm like, okay. And they say, well, then, you know, my kids won't like me. So what? God, did you really say that to your sponsee? Sorry to wipe my nose because I'm a crybaby messy today. And I go, so what? Your kids won't like you. And they're like, we're clapped at the other side of the phone. I'm like, they're not gonna like you. Well, I know, but it's my job for my kids to love me. No, it's not. What's your job? Well, then I won't be a good parent. So what? You're not a good parent. Okay, so you're not a good parent. Then what? Well, I'll be looked at badly upon my friends and my family and my kids. Okay, so what? There's a lot of bad people out there. Being a bad parent can't be so bad. Well, sure. And then the next thing is what? Okay, if I'm a bad parent, then, you know, God's entrusted me with these kids. And if I've been a bad parent, you know, then again, God's looking down on me. And you know, like, God doesn't look down on you, by the way, but, you know, that's how we feel. Let's validate our feelings here, right? The food validated it before. Now I'm doing this tough stuff to get rid of this garbage in my head. It's a story I'm telling myself. I'm listening to it and I'm believing it over and over and over again. And the fear is going to help me see that it's not truth. Those are lies, people, in your head. And doing this inventory enough, I can see, oh, yeah, you know what? My kids, yeah, they're a gift from God. I don't want to disappoint you, God. So, then you're going to ask God, okay, well, how has self-reliance failed you? It asks you right here. It says, well, we have to ask ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance had failed us? Ooh, self, self, and more self. I'm a big self, self, selfish person and self-consumed machine. That's who I am. And so that's not far enough. So I have to look at that and I'm like, okay, is there any historical reference for this? Sure. I guarantee if you're like me, all the inventory that you do and all the inventory I continue to do is based on the stacks from garbage in the back in my past life that hasn't been cleaned out. There's a nook, there's a cranny, and there's a cobweb in the attic that hasn't been cleaned out yet. And you know why this inventory process keeps coming up, and you know why we keep doing how it works, how it works, how it works? Because we got to keep working at it because we're not ready to do and chuck all of this out in a four step. It's going to keep coming up in 10 steps because life is going to keep throwing me snowballs and curveballs and every other kind of thing at me. So I look at that. I say, is there historical reference? Usually there is. Write it out. Give it up to God. Put it out there. And then has self-reliance failed me? Yes, it's failed me. How have I relied on myself? Okay, shock, horror, big hint, go back to column four. Go back and read your fourth column. And this is what I love. Write this down. How have I held my hand in the fire? That is column four for me. I have a sponsor that helps me see that so clearly. Let's look back at all the ways in which you held your hand in the fire. What are you doing or not doing with your kids? How are you behaving or not behaving in your relationship with your boyfriend? How are you behaving at work or not behaving, or just being aloof in your work relationships? It's usually me. If I'm not the problem, there is no solution. Thank you, Marie, for teaching me that in Colorado. She taught me that so kindly. It's always me that's the problem. And if I'm the problem and I can look at it through this process, then how it works, I will receive those promises because I'm about to dump this all into God's lap. That's the
5 minutes left.
Thank you so much. Okay, I'll finish this up. You can go through page 68, read this fear. It is so key. Like, it talks about God. By now, you better believing in God. You better trust God. It says rely on God. We trust this infinite God rather than our finite self, in the role that He assigns us, how He would have us be. We humbly rely upon Him. And then it goes down to say that faith is where I'm going to get my courage. I'm going to faith. All men who have faith have courage. They trust in their God. We don't apologize for God. In fact, we should be talking about God more in these rooms. I'm listening to a man, and he talks about God all the time. And this man had nothing. He was an alcoholic dying on the streets of New York City, And he says, we don't talk about God enough because we don't want to offend anybody. Let me tell you, there's an intergroup thing going on. If you haven't heard about it, they're wanting to change certain things over to God. In the steps and in the words, in the 12 steps. I think it's pretty cool. It's 'cause this is what God's going to do. He's going to remove our fear and direct our attention to how He would have us be. Brilliant. Right? And I get to turn it over to God. God, how would you have me be? And I have a list of assets and character flaws, and I look at that flaws and character asset list. It's right here in the beginning of my big old notebook. And I look at it and I go, okay, so what was the character defect that was standing in the way of my usefulness to God and the people about me in this situation? Well, perhaps I was unfriendly and hostile and bitchy. Yep, that's me. And so what do I get to be? Friendly, helpful, kind. Or how about this? I was disrespectful to my colleagues. I can even be disrespectful to my kids because I demand respect from them. But yet I should be respectful to them as well. It's a two-way street. Or perhaps I was a perfectionist and I wasn't setting realistic goals for myself. And I can find on this list all the things I am. I don't need to go in abundance and start making laundry lists. But then I can say, although I have admitted to God, myself, and another human being the exact nature of my wrongs, do I believe and am I willing to believe that God can restore me to sanity? And that's what we do. Keep flipping, right? We flip back onto six and seven, and that's what we do. We get rid of these things. And so I pray another prayer, which is just so freaking awesome. Like, it's another prayer and it's so great. And that's not till page 76. That's into action. So you need to go to the next one after me and hopefully they'll touch on that one. But the one thing I want to say also is don't forget the sex inventory. Sex inventory is relationship inventory. It's the people I have harmed and wronged, and have been naughty to and naughty with. Haha, that's kind of cute, huh? And, I have to look and review my conduct in this way. And it's a little bit different on page 69. So don't forget, you're going to look at selfishness, dishonesty, and inconsiderateness. But you're also looking at jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness, and how I'm at fault. This is a fact-finding, fact-facing mission that we're on. Congratulations. By the time you get to the fourth step, you've been rocketed into a spiritual dimension of existence. You are now. Like, I think of myself as floating out there, and I'm like, I want to be light. And I can't be light if I'm holding all these angry, swimming, nasty fish, resentment, anger, fear, whatever it may be, jealousy, whatever it is in my heart. I want to be clean and I want to be clear. When I came here to Overeaters Anonymous, I journaled something in my journal. It was a heart, it was encased with cement, and it was round with barbed wire. And I thought, how am I ever going to get free of that? I can't do enough. I went to church. It was works-based. It was like, do all these things, pray all this, da 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 da, and you are going to be free. You know what? That didn't work for me. But when I came here and they showed me how it worked through this 12 steps and through these columns, I could get free. And slowly by slowly, inch by inch, God took his pruners and he pruned back all the barbed wire. And as I did this work and continue to do it, he continues to chisel away the cement from my heart. God is giving me more of a heart like his in this process. That's what I want. I want to be able to show up. And I'll end by saying this because I know my time is already out. This week, a dear friend of mine, my first friend in Overeaters Anonymous, my first roommate on my first retreat in 12-step. Her husband was killed tragically by an avalanche here in Colorado. And you know what? Like, it's so beautiful to note that when we're working side by side, hand in hand, and we work it through this 12-step process, and we believe in a God that's so big that I know He's with her. He's with us. I mean, I saw her sponsee face to face, and she says, "I need help. I don't know how to navigate this." I said, "You call me. I'm done on this meeting at such and such a time. We'll run it through what? This inventory process." I get to work hand in hand with somebody to look at their fears so that they don't have to be afraid, so that they know how to be of maximum service to the people about them. And I'm watching my friend just navigate through the most horrific time, what it should be horrific in her life, as a spiritual experience when she texts me every month saying, every morning saying, "God is with me. God is loving me." That's how this works. And that's what we're talking about when Susan says, get in the middle of the herd, because you cannot get picked off when you are working this program, when you are loved in the embrace and the arms of a loving creator, a father, a principal. Remember, you're his child. You are his agent. It says that in the big book. I'm not lying. I've read it and highlighted it, and I believe it wholeheartedly. But it takes action on everybody's part here. It takes the action of me writing the fourth step. It takes the action of me giving it away to the fifth step. It takes the person on the receiving end to listen lovingly, and sometimes to call me on my bullshit and to tell me, "Jen, you missed some of the dishonesty there, sister. Like, let me just help you here, you know? Or don't be so hard on yourself, because I can be really hard on myself." And when I do these things, then I ultimately do what? Hands facing the ceiling, wiggling and jiggling like Jell-O, giving it over to the Father of Light who presides over all of us. How free do you want to be, people? That's what I used to hear on A Vision for You every morning. How free do you want to be? And they cheered it and chanted, like, ah-ha-ha. I now know how free I want to be.
Time.
Thank you. I want to do this work. So it works. It really does. Do it. I'm so blessed to be here. Thank you for allowing me to share. Thank you for allowing me to bear witness to such a wonderful retreat this weekend. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much, Jen. Oh, it amazing. Amazing. Thank you so much. Oh, wow. I need to soak in every word that you said.